Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, November 26, day number 330 of 2013. And today we're going to be doing something related to the holiday of Thanksgiving. We're going to be looking back. We're going to sit here and look back at our first Thanksgiving in the United States. We're going to be doing that with three of our good friends of the radio show. We're also going to be, these ladies are also going to be demonstrating some of their very unique talents that they have. Of course, I'm talking about Marta Sosa, who is known to the whole world as Cubana Rama. She's a wonderful, very talented lady. She has a radio show right here on this network. We're talking about Marilis Rassler, who's the author, a wonderful lady who wrote a book called Sitting on the Hyphen, Cuban-American. Sitting on the hyphen, and the latest friend of our show, the we'll just say she's the more recent friend of our show, and that's, of course, Tercy Bendeberg, who's a storyteller, and I tell you, she's got some wonderful stories. So these three ladies are going to share some of their special talents with us tonight, as well as we're going to remember that very first Thanksgiving in the United States. I'm looking forward to this. This is a holiday show, and I think you will enjoy it a great deal. By the way, we will have a link about our show on the Babalu blog. I think the actual post goes up either tonight or early tomorrow morning. So if you check the Babalu blog, you'll be able to see a link to this program. And I'm hoping that it will also come out tomorrow morning at The American Thinker. I'm not sure about that. I don't control that one as much, but definitely at the Babalu blog and hopefully at The American Thinker, there will be a link to the program so that many people will have an opportunity to hear about the program. Just a quick plug about my book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. The book is available in print and Kindle. You can get the book at Amazon, or you can get it from our website, Cubanos in Wisconsin. And one of the nice things about our book, there is a chapter in our book about our first Thanksgiving in the United States, and I'll share some of that with the audience tonight. We're going to take a break, and we've got three wonderful ladies on the other side of the break. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. I guess I get to manage three women tonight. Now that's going to be a task. So let me say hello to these three wonderful ladies. I feel like, you know, I've got all this responsibility tonight. So let me say hello to let's begin with Marta Sosa, also known as Cubana Rama. How are you, Marta?
I'm doing really good, Silvio. Thank you so much. Let me know if you hear me okay. If you don't, I'll take you off
speaker. I can hear. No, you're fine. You're fine. I can hear you just great. Now, Marta, you have you're living up north. So how's the weather?
Oh my gosh, it's cold and windy. What is it? What is the weather tonight, guys? Do you know? You know, Mr. Man is 18 degrees right now.
Okay, for the benefit of the audience, since I've had the honor of being on Cubana Rama's program, Mr. Man is this mysterious man who lives in her house. Okay.
Yes.
And when she's doing an interview with you, she keeps referring to Mr. Man. Well, I finally broke down and said, "Who is this guy, Mr. Man, that you keep bringing up?" Well, it turns out to be her husband. So I guess Mr. Man is a good guy. So we'll just say Mr. Man. Now, so it's cold up there. Now let's go a little bit further south to Tercy. How are you, Tercy?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. Now you're in Georgia.
I do managing three women.
Oh, okay. Well, we're gonna laugh later when you tell a story. But right. Now you're in Georgia. So how's the weather in Georgia?
It's a little bit better than at Matas. Okay. I think we're in the 30s. I can't even tell you. I should know, but I can't even tell you right now. But it's going to go down a little bit
like
more than that.
Yeah, in Texas, it's in the 40s today. We've had a little bit of a cold spell, although it's supposed to be nicer. Now let's go further south and let's say hello to Amarilis. How are you, Amarilis? You probably have the best weather of all.
It's beautiful. I was out at the bay. My son rented a place, and we went with my sister. So it's the water. Everything is nice and warm. A little windy, but nice and warm. Thank you for having me on the show. I was looking forward to it very much.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully, it'll be so much fun that we'll do it every year. We'll be a bunch of old people doing this show 30 years from now, a bunch of people saying, "I'll have to wake you up to do the show because we're all going to get so old," you know.
Speak for yourself, Silvio.
That's it.
Oh, the juvie's protesting.
Yes, okay.
I'm celebrating my 15th birthday.
Well, okay, well, you're so young. But let's...
Yeah.
You're on the young side of this show, but let's do this. What I like to do is have each one of you ladies take a minute and talk about yourself and your activities. So we'll begin with Marta. Just talk about yourself and what you do, and then we'll go around. So Marta, go first.
Thank you for having me, Silvio, and hello to the ladies. Well, my name is Marta Sosa, as you mentioned earlier, I think you mentioned earlier, and I host the Cubanorama show. It's the title of my show on Blog Talk Radio. We started doing the show, my husband and I, about 5 years ago, and he is the silent right hand of Cubanorama, and we interview musicians and authors and I mean, you name it, we've done it all. We even did, for almost a year, over a year, we held programs about missing people, not only in America, but, people around the world trying to help and bring attention to that serious problem. But more than anything, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a friend to so many people on Facebook who support me. And without you guys, and I always say this, without the people that ask me to be on the show and the people who listen, I would be nothing. I would be just another person on Facebook. So it's you guys and you, Silvio, for having me. Thank you for the honor of being on your show.
Well, thank you. You had me on your show, and that was a great honor. Now, let me ask you a question. Is there any truth to the rumor that you're Cubanorama and your husband is Cubanorama? Is that any truth to that?
Sometimes I harass him and say that, yeah. It's kind of funny.
All right, so he's Cubanorama. Okay, so we will have Cubanorama and Cubanorama. Okay, let's go to Tercy. Tell us about yourself, Tercy.
Well, I am a storyteller, and I've been doing this professionally since 1992.
Right.
I was with the Woodruff Arts Center, Young Audiences, for 20 years. I finished that relationship this spring. I tell stories to children of all ages. Like my sister likes to say, womb to tomb, okay?
Okay.
So not just the children, but people of all ages. And I keep pinching myself because I love what I do. I mostly do folk tales that I have collected in my travels, or I have adapted. and usually there's music in the folktales, or I do family and personal stories. And that's pretty much what I do, and it's like, have story, will travel.
Great. All right. Now, Marilis, tell us about yourself.
Well, like Juana Rama, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a nana, and I also wrote Cuban-American
dance. Okay, what is a nana? A nana is what? What is a nana?
A nana is a Leila. We had so many abuelas and Leilas and
okay.
Lelita that
okay,
my
okay.
granddaughter nicknamed me Nana when she could hardly
okay,
talk, so
right.
it stuck.
So
and,
you're Nana. Okay, very good.
I'm Nana. And then okay. I wrote Cuban-American Dancing on the Hyphen, and it's to tell about my Operation Pedro Pan experience, my immigration experience, and to bring a taste of Cuba to Cubans and Americans. And my dream is to put a lot of love in young people for freedom, that they would protect the freedom that we have.
Great.
So,
well, that's wonderful, ladies. Now let's do this. We're going to begin by having each one relate or tell the story of your first Thanksgiving in the United States. And in the second segment, each one of you is actually going to perform. Amarilis is going to read a poem. Terci is going to tell a story. And Cubana Rama is going to do Celia Cruz. Is that right, Marta? Is that your show? Your oh.
Okay, I'll try.
Okay, all right. So you're going to surprise us tonight. You're going to surprise us tonight with your segment. But so let's do our first Thanksgiving, and I'm going to violate all the principles of chivalry, and I'll start first.
Good.
And our first Thanksgiving was in Wisconsin, and we made it to Wisconsin like a lot of people made it to other parts. In the country. Not everybody grew up in Miami. I guess most of them did, but not some of us didn't. And our first Thanksgiving was a pretty typical Thanksgiving. My uncle and his family were already living there. So we got together, the two families got together, and we had it was actually a nice day for my dad because he didn't have to work, and he had been running basically two jobs, as was the case in those early days when fathers had to do more than one job. So anyway, we got together at my uncle's house, and we had a nice Thanksgiving, and we had a nice dinner. For me personally, it was really the first time I had ever had turkey. That's not something we have in Cuba. And for me, the most interesting part about the whole Thanksgiving experience was, and I'm writing a post about this, hopefully it'll appear on American Thinker tomorrow, I couldn't understand why a bird from Wisconsin would be called a turkey. I couldn't figure out. I kept asking my cousins, okay, why is this thing called a turkey? Wasn't he born in Wisconsin? So anyway, so they explained that nobody could explain that to me. Nobody could explain to me why they would call this bird a turkey, what we call pavo in Spanish. And so it became a real curiosity of mine why they call this bird a turkey. And eventually, many, many years later, I came to the answer, and the answer is that this goes back to the old English days, that the turkey was such an ugly-looking bird that they named it turkey, because I guess in old England, something that wasn't pretty was called a turkey. So anyway, but that was my big question about Thanksgiving. You know, why do they call this bird a turkey when he was actually born in Wisconsin? You know, why did they pick such a name for the bird? So that's basically my first Thanksgiving in the United States. We had a good time. We left early because we had to go home. My dad had to get up early the next morning, so we took the bus. We didn't have a car back then. We took the bus, and on the way home, we were the only people in the bus, as happens to be the case. Well, that's what happens, you know, on holidays. Nobody rides the bus. So our family was the only people in the bus, along with the driver, and we rode through Madison, Wisconsin, as we were driving through, and just kind of reminiscing a little bit of what had happened that day. So that's kind of my story, ladies. I hope you like it. That's kind of my story. So let's go to Marta. You tell us about your first Thanksgiving.
Well, my first Thanksgiving is probably very different from everyone else because my mom was a practicing Jehovah's Witness for many, many years. I think that after my dad went into agriculture, She joined the Jehovah's Witnesses. And so I don't remember in Cuba celebrating. I think I was very, very young when we celebrated Christmas. And then the next time that I began celebrating was when I moved to Minnesota, and I was 16 years old, and I met a friend here who invited me to his home for Thanksgiving. And it was just the nicest family, Sylvia. It was, excuse me, I'm still battling a cold. It was, the lady had a couple of children who were foster kids. My friend had like two or three other young men who didn't have, I don't know, you know, they didn't have family, or they didn't have, I can't recall exactly what the deal was, but I remember it was like everybody was coming together and no one was having Thanksgiving at their home. So it was the best time ever. And the neat thing about it, it was an American Indian family who invited me to spend Thanksgiving with them. The food was delicious. Everyone joined and cleaned in the kitchen, and the lady of the house, the mom and the dad, were like, I can't tell you, they were like my parents. They were just so amazing. So my first Thanksgiving was in Minnesota with a real authentic American Indian family who had a bunch of kids whose families were not celebrating.
Wow, interesting.
It was fun.
All right. Very good. Well, let's go to Teresi. Tell us about your first Thanksgiving.
Well, I was 11 years old for my first Thanksgiving, and I was at Oakhurst Elementary when I first started hearing about Indians and Pilgrims. And my English was still very poor because we arrived February of 64, and that was my first full year in school, and it was just only November. But I kind of got an idea, and I went home and tried to tell my parents about it, and we had extended family here already that knew what Thanksgiving was and we're going to be celebrating. But my parents understood something about San Giving.
Right.
You know, Saint Giving.
Right.
A saint that gives, okay?
Right.
I said, no, it's kind of like that. But we're the ones that give. We give thanks. So the first year, and I'm going to talk about our second Thanksgiving in the story that I'm going to tell you, but on the first year, we decided not to get together with our extended family, which we did a lot of things with. I'm not sure why. Maybe Daddy had to work even though it was Thanksgiving, and I'm not sure. I just know that we were like lost in the city. We drove all around Decatur and all around parts of Atlanta and checked out things and we're trying to figure out what the whole holiday was about. And then when we went home and we had a meal, and that was a very quiet Thanksgiving, very different from the following year. And then I'll tell you that in story.
Yes.
And I also wanted to say one more thing. I am too a mother. I have two sons and I am a daughter.
Good.
I have very elderly parents. Who we call Ricky and Lucy, like the characters, and because they behave like Ricky and Lucy.
Right.
And I have
go ahead.
Because they do. You know, you have no idea.
Right.
They're gonna vary us, okay?
Yeah. Well, of course, I should add from the last time that you were on, you were from Florida Camagüey, which is a city in the province of Camagüey, actually not far from where my mother was born and where I spent a lot of my early years. Now, Marta, before I forget, where were you from? What part of Cuba are you from?
I was born, I know everybody says they're from Havana, but I'm from Havana. I was born in Arroyo Naranjo. It was called Arroyo Naranjo, Parraga.
Okay, all right. I'm not familiar with that, but I mean, it's in the Havana area, is that right, or what?
Yes, it's if you know La Vibora, if you've heard of La Vibora, it's right by La Vibora.
By the way, I love that name, La Vibora. I mean, what would you name a neighborhood La Vibora? But that is a great, that is a great name. All right, we're not forgetting.
I was born in Havana. My father was born in Florida.
Okay.
I was born in Santa Suárez.
Okay.
But I visited Florida
very
a lot with my dad, so I just wanted to put that in.
Yeah. Now, Amarilis has a very unique story because she's a Pedro Pan. And
yeah.
For those who may not know what that is, those were the unaccompanied children, 14,000 of them, who came to the United States between 1960 and 1962. So, Amarilis, take it from there. What was your first Thanksgiving like, and did you have a chance to spend it with your parents?
No. Actually, we came in August, and so we were a few months into being here, and we were with a family that was friends of my parents. They were friends of my parents in Cuba, but I did not know them. I just knew their boys from seeing them at the club in Cuba that we belonged to, but I didn't know them. So my sister and I were there, and the actual experience of Thanksgiving was that we ate chicken because the money was very scarce there. So it was chicken.
Right.
But my Thanksgiving dinner was at school, and it was just when I went down the line with my little tray and I saw the turkey and the gravy and the mashed potatoes with the cranberry and then the scoop of filling, I just thought, it smells so good, I couldn't wait to eat it. And my actual experience of the whole thing that they explained to me about the pilgrims is I was so worried as a 10-year-old for the pilgrims. Because in Cuba, all the movies I saw of the Westerns, you know, the Indians were killing people.
Right.
So I was very worried for the pilgrims. I thought, how did they sit down and eat a meal? You know, how did they make peace and all? So, and not knowing enough English, I remember that. I remember being. But I also remember missing my mother. And this week I've been able to visit with my sister, and she says, the lady that took care of us, she was a very nice lady, the lady of the house, the mother, she kept saying that things that I must have blocked, that I cried a lot wanting my mother. Mm. So I guess the first Thanksgiving wasn't a real Thanksgiving as far as we were grateful we were here, but we were longing for our parents. So that was the first Thanksgiving.
And when did your parents actually come?
Well, my mother came December, which was nice because it wasn't too long. My father came then the next year. But my mother came in December, and she came right around my birthday. So it worked out really nice. It was a really nice gift.
And what part of Cuba are you from?
I am from La Habana.
Okay.
So,
all right. You're from the city. Yeah, I'm you know, from the interior, as they like to say in Cuba, el interior, you know, as they like to say in Cuba, although I did spend the last few years in Cuba in Havana when my father was eventually transferred there as part of his job. Okay, here's what we're going to do, ladies. We're going to hear now from each of you. You all have a very special talent, and I'd like to begin with Amarilis. I understand you have a poem that you're going to read to us.
Yes, I wrote this month, and it reminds me a great deal of what you do, and Terci, and Kuanarama, and Ferdinand. That also, I want to thank Kuanarama because she came into my life just at the right time. My mother passed away the day before Mother's Day, and I had met Kuanarama before that. So when I have met all of you, it's like an extension of my mom. Mm. So it's been a really nice experience to be connected with you all. But yes, this is Cubans Like the Pilgrims. I wrote this about Thanksgiving and Cubans. Some in a boat or raft, others by plane, all with dreams, but none without pain. Like the pilgrims, Cubans came, seeking freedom to new terrain. Stripped of home, such trials to come, yet hearts aglow with flames of hope. Fearsome adventures, new ways to learn, the past, a close echo, much to yearn. Sweat of brow, labor of soul, and prayers for mortar to make broken hearts whole. Like the pilgrims, Cubans came, seeking freedom to new terrain. And like the pilgrims, they furrow tracks, striving to leave their story to impact.
All right, very nice. Very nice. And we should add that in your book, Dancing on the Hyphen, you have a lot of poems. That's one of the most beautiful things about your book, that you tell the story with poetry. So, and one of my favorite poems is the one about your grandfather that that you read the last time you were on. I thought that was very, very good. I loved that a great deal. Just briefly tell us about your grandfather.
Oh, my grandfather, he was so much fun. He worked as he worked for the yacht club in Cuba in the kitchen as counting food and an accountant of things there. And he loved to cook, and he loved to buy us toys. Every time he went to Old Havana or whatever, he'd bring us toys. And the funny thing about my grandfather was that he was almost like a clown because he would drop things. So every time he went to the refrigerator to open it, my grandmother would be watching because he would take something out. And, of course, us kids would laugh when something would fall out and break. So he was a very, very loving grandfather. So I miss him.
Yes. And did he die in the United States or in Cuba?
He died in the United States, yes. I think he was like 67, 68, yes.
Yeah, okay. Very good. Well, Tercy, you are a storyteller, and you have a story tonight that you're going to tell us. It has something to do with Thanksgiving, so please, go right ahead.
It's more of a loose story anecdote, but I will tell it as much as I can as a story. The second year, which was 1965, other families had come to that neighborhood in Decatur, Georgia. They were sponsored by a local church, Oakhurst Baptist Church. Our family had been sponsored by First Baptist Church Decatur. And so we had already made a decision that we were all going to get together and celebrate Thanksgiving. And it was a very practical thing to do because, as Amarili said, money was very tight at that time. So we all contributed to the feast, to the meal. And right before Thanksgiving, the week before Thanksgiving, I had gone to First Baptist Church Decatur, the church that sponsored us, with my mother and my father and my sister, and we were there to have our picture taken for the church pictorial, for the book, the church book that has the addresses and the pictures of families. And it just so happened that on that Wednesday night, they were also celebrating the church, a Thanksgiving meal. And they usually still do that in many churches. For people that don't have any family, there's at least one meal, and it's usually the week before Thanksgiving, where people can have the turkey and the dressing and the cranberry sauce and everything else, the gravy. And so we were at the same level as the fellowship hall where we had our picture taken. And I can remember smelling the most delicious thing and looking at table after table after table after table that was set really, really pretty. And there were this little things that kind of moved, red, like jello, but it wasn't jello, and it was the cranberry sauce. But I also smelled something that I had never smelled before, and what I was smelling was cornbread dressing, which is one of the things that I know how to make well. And I learned from a Southern lady how to make it, but I didn't know at the time what it was. And so the picture had been taken already, the pictures, and we were talking to Dr. Hall, who was the minister at First Baptist Decatur, and one of the ladies in the kitchen, an African American lady, kind of called me with her finger. She went like, pss, pss. And so I went over there, and she said, "You want to taste the dressing?" And she showed me, and I didn't understand everything she was saying, but I knew she wanted me to taste it, and it was the most delicious thing I had ever had in my life. Okay, I just loved it. So Dr. Hall asked us to stay for the fellowship meal that night, for the Wednesday night meal. And Daddy, like you said, Silvio, had a second job. He worked for the Fan and Bill, which was a restaurant. So he worked at night after he finished his work at the factory. And so we couldn't stay for the meal. When we went back to our neighborhood, the church that sponsored the other Cubans that lived in that neighborhood was not very far. It was within walking distance. Oakhurst Baptist Church. There was also an Oakhurst Elementary where I went to school, And there were two ladies that just loved the Cubans, and they taught English classes. And they came to visit, and I said something to them about the dressing and about something called pumpkin pie. And the other children, you know, we just talked to Miss Griffin and the other lady, and right now I'm blank on her name. I want to say Griselle, Miss Griselle. And so we just said, she asked us questions, and we said things like, we're getting together, still in broken English. We put all food together, all family together. We eat black bean, white rice, and meat, not sure what meat, maybe turkey. And so that's pretty much what we told her. And so on the night that we got together, all of these families, these two ladies knocked on our door and showed up with dressing, cornbread dressing, with pumpkin pie, and a few other side dishes, and we all broke bread together. And then my great-uncle, who was the first one to leave Cuba, Jesus Luis Cabrera was his name, he came by the house and he said, we were all finished eating, and he said, we're going to take a caravan downtown. And we said, where are we going downtown? Downtown Atlanta. He says, we're going to Rich's, where I work. Rich's is a department store. And back then, the main store was downtown Atlanta, and there was a bridge called the Crystal Bridge between two buildings. One building was the store of fashion. The other building was the store of homes. So in fashion, you know, clothes and all those things, and the store of homes, furniture, refrigerators, appliances. And the bridge was called the Crystal Bridge because it was made of glass, and there were four stories to that bridge. And when we got there, we found a place to park, and the place was packed. There were so many people. I had never seen so many people together, and it took us a while to get there, and it was so cold. But when we got there, everything was dark. And suddenly the first level of the bridge lit up, and there was a choir. And the choir started to sing, and we could all hear it in the street. And there was a choir that faced one side of the street, and there was a choir that faced the other side of the street in the same level of the bridge. So there were actually eight choirs. And so every time the choirs finished, another one lit up, the one above, and then the one above, and then the one above that. And then at the last song that was sung was O Holy Night. And when the lady hit the highest note of Oh Holy Night, suddenly this huge tree at the very top of the bridge was lit. And since then, I've known that the star itself was 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. The diameter was like 35 inches wide. It was at least 50 to 70 feet tall, the tree itself. And the whole night was finished by everyone. Everyone in the audience, we were all invited to sing Silent Night, and because we didn't know the words in English, we sang Noche de Paz in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of the sweetest memories, and we did that for many years until Rich's closed. But it was one of the biggest traditions was to go to Rich's on the night of Thanksgiving and to see the lighting of the tree and first the choirs singing. And then I've got to tell you one more thing because it's so much fun. The day after that, Tio Cabrera, Great Uncle Cabrera, always took us downtown again to ride the Pink Pig. And the Pink Pig was a monorail that was inside the children's toy department at Rich's, where I later worked as a young woman when I was a little girl back then. And the Pink Pig, there were two of them, Percival and Priscilla. And they've retired. They still have the Pink Pig in Atlanta. They have it now at a. They're brand new little trains, and they look like pigs. And the two old pigs are at the Atlanta History Center. They're in storage there, and every once in a while they bring them out so that we can see them. But you had to really be. An adult couldn't get inside the pig, because he had a roof. But it was the sweetest little thing, and you know, I always tell the children that before Nintendo and before whatever, the circus, there was the Pink Pig. And so those are my Thanksgiving memories. And when I had children when we had children of our own, I made sure that the children rode the pink pig too. And on Thanksgiving Day, at the very end of the day, when my family is still visiting with one another, I kind of sit to the side, and I have a piece of pumpkin pie, not apple pie, pumpkin pie, because I can't eat the dessert right after we finish eating. I'm too full. So I have my pumpkin pie then with some coffee, and I put on my pink pig earrings, and I pinch myself because I know how lucky I am to live in this wonderful land of the free and home of the brave. And that's my story.
All right. Now, that's absolutely cool. You know, I was just going to say, when you were relating your story, that the role that uncles have played in all of our lives, I'm sure, Amarilis, you have an uncle story, and I'm sure, Marta, you do also. And I do. In fact, just by coincidence today, I saw a picture of my late uncle, and I put it on Facebook because they look so sharp, my uncle and my aunt. Mm-hmm. They look so sharp, and it just amazes me how Cubans have such large families, you know, and everybody would do things together.
Mm-hmm.
And your story about the uncle. So, Marta, what would you like to relate to us tonight?
Well, I thought, you know, I think you said it right. I've never done Celia Cruz on the air, but, you know, you got me. And I now that you said, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should do it. I actually have my band with me tonight. Are you ready, guys?
Well, I'm ready for you if you're ready for me, yeah.
Okay, I don't want to show off on your show.
Okay. Well, that actually sounded pretty good. I mean, you should be getting a contract anytime there, Marta. I mean, that's actually but one of the things that where Marta, you and I do have something in common, and that is that we grew up in the very cold parts of the country. So maybe you can explain to us what it was like to get acclimated to those colder climates up there.
Oh, I couldn't get over this, Celia. You really got me going. Well, getting acclimated, you know, actually, when I moved to the United States from Cuba, we went straight to New Jersey. And so, you know, we got used to, I mean, the first thing is getting off the plane, for one, and feeling that air. You just feel like I was 10 years old, Silvio. I was like frozen. It was December 4th when we arrived in Miami, and I think it was probably 2 weeks later when we arrived in at Newark Airport. And it was insane. It was so cold. I had no idea what was happening to us. And going to school, but it didn't take long, you know. I mean, I think that when you're a kid, it doesn't take very long. Then moving to Minnesota when I was 16, it's about the same as Jersey, but the air is a little bit, it's drier, it's not as humid. But I think the older that I get, the less that I like it. I think when I was a kid, it didn't bother me so much. Now that I'm older, I just want to walk around somewhere where there's palm trees and ocean and, you know, I don't want to walk in the snow and tread. I don't want to do that anymore.
Well, you're like, I'm sure you ladies have heard the Alba de Guedes joke about the Cuban who wanted to move to Pennsylvania. Have you guys heard that?
No,
I would
haven't
recommend
heard it, so
that.
I want to hear it.
No.
Yeah. Well, I'm not as good as Alvarez Guedes, obviously, but the story goes something like this, and I would, you know, you can check it out later because nobody does it like Alvarez Guedes. But basically, it's a Cuban in Miami who's complaining about the heat, and he's complaining about the humidity, you know. So he decides to move to Pennsylvania. So he goes up to Pennsylvania, and the first letter he writes back, you know, it's like, hey, this is great, you know. None of the Cubans screaming, you know, it's great. I love it here. Everything is so orderly. Everything is so great, you know. None of these Cubans, you know, screaming at me. Then a little bit of time passes, and he writes back, and he says, well, yeah, it is a little chilly, and I have to wear a coat and so on. And then it keeps going. And then that's when some of the language gets a little rough in the joke. But basically at the end, he goes back to Miami because he doesn't like the cold. You know, he says, I don't want to shovel snow anymore. And then he goes back to Miami. So maybe Marta, you're going to go back to your roots eventually someday. Your roots, not necessarily Miami, but I mean the tropics. You know, maybe you'll eventually have an opportunity to go back there, you know, maybe later on. In life, obviously, it's not something you can do right away, maybe, but I think maybe eventually every Cuban goes back to Miami. That's what everybody tells me, that when you get older, everybody goes back to Miami. I don't know if you ladies, let me hear from Amarilis. Do you sense that a lot of Cubans go back to Miami after they get older?
Well, to Florida, some part of Florida, I guess. They either go to Florida,
yeah,
or believe it or not, there's some in Georgia where Tercy is.
Right.
But yes, they do come to Florida.
Yeah. Well, let me do this. Is Celia Cruz coming back on the show, Marta, or has she done her is she coming back, or is that it for Celia Cruz?
Well, you know, if you want a little bit more, I can sing a little bit more.
No, but I want to hear you singing. I want to hear you singing Pinal del Río. I want to hear you singing, but anyway, let's do this. Let's talk a little bit about what Thanksgiving means, because I think that for as just as a, and I'll, you know, we'll start with Amarilis, but to me, Thanksgiving, the reason we didn't know anything about Thanksgiving in Cuba, I didn't, is because it is a very American holiday. Now, today, more people know about Thanksgiving because of the Internet and you know, it's a little bit better known. But back in the 60s, at least when I came, nobody knew about Thanksgiving, you know, and certainly not the Cubans that I knew didn't know anything about it. But I think the beauty of Thanksgiving and the reason that I think we as Cuban refugees related to it, and this is going to be part of the article that I'm writing tomorrow, hopefully it'll be published tomorrow at the American Thinker, but I gave three reasons as to why I think we Cubans related to Thanksgiving. The first one is that we like family meals. We like getting together and having family meals. So Thanksgiving was a natural for that. Number two, we like telling stories. And Thanksgiving is full of stories. I mean, just full of stories. Like Amarilis was talking about the pilgrims and the Indians. It's full of stories. Thanksgiving is nothing but stories. And the third reason that I think we related to it is because we had a lot to be thankful for. Mm-hmm. You know, in the case of Amarilis, you didn't have your parents, I know, but at least in my case, we were grateful, and I think we were thankful that we had the opportunity to start again in the United States. So let me begin with Amarilis and your thoughts about Thanksgiving as a holiday and what it means to you. And then we'll go to Tercy, and then we'll have Celia Cruz finish it later.
Well, I think when you've brought those points up, and Tercy has been talking about it too in emails, I think that we have so much in common with the pilgrims because they came here for freedom. And I have been thinking more and more of that. How are we similar to them? And they had to leave everything behind. They brought very little with them, and that's the way it was with us. And they came to just a new terrain, a new land, a new so many new things. So I think we have a great deal in common. And now that I think about it, I never thought about it before, but I've been thinking these last 2 weeks on it, and that's why I wrote the little poem. But for me, Thanksgiving is being grateful and thanking God for family and for friends. And this year, when I do bow my head, I will be thanking God for you all because you've made a real impact in my life. It was much needed that I be, that I would get to know other Cubans. And my mother had such love for Cuba and culture, and she's the one that I talk more about that. So it really has meant a lot. So,
right. And I just want to say one thing to follow up on that, Amarilis. The one person who brought you and I together and also Tercy was Fernando Hernandez. Unfortunately, he couldn't join us tonight.
Yeah.
He had a last-minute scheduling conflict, but I was hoping he could join us because he had a lot to do with bringing us together. Now, let me hear from Tercy. You know, Thanksgiving, what does it mean to you? And not necessarily that first year, but just in general, you know, what does it mean to you?
Well, Thanksgiving is my favorite American holiday.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Halloween. Because Christmas, it was something that we had celebrated in Cuba, even though it was halted eventually. But I was familiar with that holiday. I just think it's a wonderful thing, just a tremendously wonderful thing, to have a day where you're just giving thanks and where you're not buying gifts, too. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I mind spending money on anyone else. It's just that, especially as you get to be a mom, And holidays can be really hard on moms, especially if you're busy and you're working, just putting it all together. That's one day where we're just getting together to give thanks. And as you said, particularly for Cubans, Cuban Americans, we have so much to be thankful for. And we've been given a home, you know. We've been given a home. We've been given a new start, and that just means a lot. I wanted to say one more thing to be silly, okay? No grandchildren yet, so I'm not a nana or whatever. What did you call it, Amarilis, Lela?
Nana.
Nana. Okay, but when I go to the beach, I put a sign that says rent a. I take my beach toys and I say, rent a grandchild. I'm just kidding, okay? I'm just kidding. I do have a grandniece named Ruby Bell, who's precious, but she lives up in New York, and I get to see her for family vacations, and she'll be back. She'll be here for Christmas, Lord willing. And there's another little grandnephew on the way, so I'm very grateful for that. But when we get together, and I was going to say the original family that left Cuba with that great uncle, you know, Luis Cabrera, who was my grandmother's brother, we all still get together. Now, Tio Cabrera and Tia Coralia are gone, and Mommy and Papi, my parents, are now the elders, the very, very elders, the very elderly. But sometimes when we're all together, it almost feels like they're there, too, around the table.
Right.
It just feels like that to me, that they're there. And I'm hoping that we will continue to get together because it just means a lot. And you're right about the stories. Lots of stories, lots to be thankful for, and a time for family to gather. So that's what Thanksgiving means to me.
Yeah. I guess I should say that I am not a nano either, that I don't have any. I have three sons, but I don't. There's nothing more. No, nobody, nothing more than that.
I'll lend you my sign when you go to the beach.
That's right. Yeah, I know, no, nothing that I know of that is. Okay, Marta.
Marta is a
Juby,
okay? Marta is too young to have grandchildren.
That's it. That's right. But
well,
Martha, tell us about what Thanksgiving means to you.
Oh, my goodness. Thanksgiving means, to me, it's, you know, I can't tell the difference between family and friends. I think that when I let people into my life and I consider them a friend, to me, they are family. They can do no wrong unless... I was going to say, unless they're a communist.
That's a good one.
That's good,
you know,
Martha.
But,
I like
but,
that.
you know, unless they're communists, but I understand that people have different beliefs and different, you know, ideas about politics and so on. And so I have my strong beliefs about that, but at the same time, I have such love for freedom that I allow other people to have the same, you know, if I want to be able to express myself, I have to allow other people to express how they feel. But family, to me, is friendship, is people who are loyal to each other. Even when they disagree, about politics and religion, and that you can look beyond that, and that those things are not held between two people who truly love each other. And I'm not talking about husband and wife. I'm talking friendship. I'm talking friends like sisters, like brothers, like, you know, like the way I love my friends. To me, they're everything. So when I give people my friendship, I give them my support. I'm loyal. And Thanksgiving, especially, makes me think of, because I have such a small family here, Silvio, that my friends, even though on Facebook I'm not with them, I feel like when I see the photos or I see people's writings, and I just feel like I'm there with them. And I'm so thankful that they're sharing it and that they're allowing other people to see and take a little peek into their lives. So for me, the same thing with Christmas. Christmas and Thanksgiving are amazing, especially with social media. You know, without it, I would be so lonely here in Minnesota. And I know you know what it feels like because you were in Wisconsin. You're so far away from the Cuban community, from the warmth. And I think the one that's the luckiest one of us all this evening is Amarilis. She's down there in the nice heat and, you know, not just the weather, but the warmth of the people in Miami. And I think she's in Miami, or is she in a different part of
Tampa?
I'm in Tampa. There's Cubans in Tampa, though. There's a lot. Isn't there a lot more in Tampa? Yeah, so that is, I mean, how could you go wrong? I'm going to Tampa.
Well, there is actually a lot of Cuban history in Tampa, isn't there,
yes.
Amarilis? I mean, going back 100 years, yeah.
Yes, wow. Yes, we have Ybor City. That is, it has its roots, a lot of Cuban active little museums there with Jose Marti and everything.
Right.
But let me tell you, I have done my time in cold weather. We lived in Connecticut 3 years.
Oh.
I have done my time there. Then we came down here again. So
yeah.
You know what it's like.
No, but I often wonder, you know, and we'll have to close right now. We're just about out of time. But I've often wondered, you know, what if we had never left Cuba? Meaning, what if Cuba had turned out to be different and we had never left Cuba? You know, what kind of life would we have had? And I said, you know, I'm sure we would have had normal lives and all of that, but would we have celebrated Thanksgiving? I don't know if that would have become a part of Cuban culture. So sometimes I think that as much pain, as painful as it was, as difficult as it was to have to leave, and it was certainly a lot more difficult on our parents than it was on us, at least in our case. I think our parents were the ones who really had to do the two jobs and make all the sacrifices. But I think all of us, in a way, having gone through this refugee experience and having to acclimate ourselves to a new country, I think that we probably became stronger people, and maybe we appreciate, as Thirsty was saying, Amarilis was saying, and Marta was saying, maybe we appreciate our freedoms a little bit more because we know what it's like to lose them. We know what it's like, you know, we know what repression is, and we know how difficult it is for people in Cuba even today to have to live through that. But that's going to have to do it, ladies. We're just about out of time, and I just want to thank all of you.
Thank you, Silvio.
I'm going to begin with Marta. I'm going to give each of you 30 seconds to tell us about your next activity. Marta, I know your show, I'm sure you're planning a show, so what's on the agenda?
Oh my goodness! I've been a little bit on the down with my health, but I have a bunch of stuff planned for December, and those shows are going to be, the ads are going to be up on my website, uncubanorama.com. pretty soon, probably after Thanksgiving, because we've been so, so busy between, you know, getting over COVID and now with Thanksgiving. But I just want to give you, thank you, Silvio, for having me on the show. You know, it's been a wonderful time with Amarilis and with Percy and with you. And I'm so thankful to the ladies. I'm honored to be here with them and listening to their stories and being a part of your family.
Well, thank you so much. The feelings are mutual. We're so happy that you could join us. Tercy, tell us about, are you doing any storytelling here soon?
I am, but it's mostly private holiday shows at different homes.
I see.
And different events, and then I go back to doing school shows in January. And that's when it gets busy again. Thank you so much for having me. And like Marta said, I love being with you guys. It's almost like being together in the living room. I've said this before,
that's right.
But it's true. All we need is a cafecito. Okay?
That's right.
A cafecito cubano. And it's just I knew it was going to be fun, and it was. And cool. Just love meeting each one of you. So thank you
very
much.
Speaking of, my pleasure. It's a great honor to have you. But speaking of cafecito, I've seen Amarilis post quite a few of the dishes that she makes. So I'm sure we will expect, when we do finally get together in person, we do expect Amarilis to cook for us. Right, Amarilis?
Okay. That will be a pleasure. It's been wonderful. It's been wonderful being in the show. Thank you. Thank you. So good to talk and hear Kuana Rama and Tercy and you. And what am I doing? I am doing a lot of writing. I am still connected with a lot of writers' groups, and I'm talking in some libraries about my books. So I'm staying busy. Thank you.
Well, thank
very
you
much.
So much, ladies, for being with me tonight. Thank you very much. A very happy Thanksgiving to you and to your families. And we'll all see each other in Facebook after we all have our our little vacation coming up here. So thank you so much for joining me tonight. Thank you, Marta. Thank you, Tercy. And thank you, Amarilis.
Bless yours. Good night.
Night.
Good night, guys. Well, that's going to do it, folks. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. What a neat idea to get these ladies together and talk about Thanksgiving. So I think we're going to do this more often. I like these activities. So we'll definitely do it next year. We'll definitely do another one of these shows next year. Thank you very much, everybody. I just wanted to give you a little heads up. My good friend Frank Burke is going to be reciting some Thanksgiving poetry tomorrow. We're going to do a special, like a special Thanksgiving holiday card or something. He's going to be doing some interpretations, some of the favorite poems of Thanksgiving, and he's very good at that. Frank is very good at doing that. So we're going to be doing that tomorrow. So hopefully that'll be on Facebook so that you can hear that for Thanksgiving. But again, good night to everybody. Good night to the ladies, and we will see you again. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas.